live from iDeveloper TV Towers at the heart of East Bollockshire, Tetbury. Here in the studio are your hosts for iDeveloper Live episode 27, Steve Scotty Scott and John the Cockle Fox.
Oh, dude.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to iDeveloper Live episode 27. And this is going to be a real pleasure because we're sat here in the iDeveloper film studio, which is actually just the attic of the building we're in. And but I'm sat in a comfy chair, and right next to me in another comfy chair is Mr. John Fox. We are in the same room together.
I've never been in such a comfy chair while doing this recording. In fact, normally when I do the recording, I'm like kind of stuck very uncomfortably in a corner of my loft in order to find the least echoey place to be able to do the recording. And I've never had such luxury. I almost feel like, I don't know, a rock star of the indie Mac developer podcast world.
Well, I have to say, normally when I'm watching you on video for that bit, in your dressing gown, it's quite disconcerting. So I'm glad actually you're in clothes. Very nice shirt, actually.
Thank you.
I haven't seen that shirt for a while.
Except every day for the last how many days. We're going to reveal some secrets. Is that we have to wear the same shirt every day for continuity purposes, so that we kind of take our shirts on and off, so that we don't make them too funky and skunky over the course of the days. But it hasn't worked.
Does somebody have a mobile on? See, the chat room is really handy. Actually, Dave is just ahead of you because he's just asked John if he's got a mobile in his pocket, and John took it out and did it. See, we have engineers here doing this sort of stuff. How pro is this? But anyway, John, you're here because we've been filming a course on cappuccino, which we'll get on to talk about in just a minute. But as you say, we've been doing it for a number of days, but continuity requires the same shirt. So how does that shirt feel?
Well, it's. I think if I were to take it off, it would stand up on its own. It's kind of like Jim Morrison's leather pants, I think.
That's a thought that I don't want. Actually, we got away quite lucky when we were up here just over a year ago. In fact, almost exactly a year ago, with Jiva DeVoe. It was a heat wave here in the UK, so it had to reach at least 75, something like that. And we were filming for over 5 days. He was in the same T-shirt, and by the end, I have to say, he smelled bad. He didn't smell that good at the start, but...
Does he know that you've just told everybody in the world that he smells bad?
I don't know. Is he in the chat room?
I hope not. wait, is that somebody knocking on the door?
He might be. He's all right. No, he smelled lovely. So, John, I called you John the Cockle Fox. What's all that about?
Well, okay. So before I came here, I spent about 8 days in Italy. And as is my wont, I posted many, many photos of the what I call food porn variety, including one of my favorite dishes, which is spaghetti with clams, which to get it perfect, you have to be on the Italian seacoast for the particular types of clams and the proper preparation. And my good dear friend Graham Lee, ever thoughtful, decided that I shouldn't have to go without similar delicacies while I'm here in the UK, because one of the last things I say is like, I'm not going to be doing too many more food porn shots because I am going to England after all. And when we met up for what's it called, Cocoa Head Swindon, is that the what you call
it? I think it's Four Guys and Some Beer, but
Four Guys and Some Beer.
Four
Guys and Some Beer, starring Hugh Grant. So we went to Cocoa Head Swindon, and when I arrived at the table there, before me was a British delicacy, the likes of which I hope never have to see again in my life. But they were pickled cockles, and I have to say, I don't know whether they were foul or smelling or tasting, but it was a very thoughtful thing. Thank you so much, Graham. But man, they were disgusting. I think I posted a picture or two of them.
You see, there's a reason they keep them in brine. That's to stop the smell spreading. But they drained them, so they were just in the jar. So every time someone went to eat one, the whole pub had to suffer the smell of pickled cockles.
And what was hilarious is that at the end of a fairly prodigious night of drinking, the barkeep came by and said, you know, by the way, you know, I did drain that for you, so if you were thinking of taking it home, they might go off. So, you know, like going, there's this two faulty assumptions there. A, that I want to take it home, and B, that they would go off. They clearly had already had, but I don't know. It was great. It was grand and wonderful.
Well, this week is a week of firsts, because it's the first time we've done this in the same room. No, we did it after NS Conference Atlanta, but it's the first time we've done it live in the same room. It's the first time I've had an engineer in the room while we're doing it. And happy birthday, Dave.
Happy birthday, Dave. I haven't done enough to wish Dave a happy birthday. I think I posted one video. There are several outtake videos that will come as a result of this week, but Dave has been kind enough to let me crash at his place, and he's been a tremendous host.
Because I wasn't kind enough to let you stay at mine.
You were smart enough not to let me stay at your place, but it was very kind, and he and Claire are just lovely people. Thank you, Dave. Thank you, Claire. Happy birthday, Dave.
I agree with everything you've just said. And because it's Dave's birthday, he's going out, so we can't waffle on for too long today. So we will be finishing approximately, I don't know, when we finish. So first, but also another first this week is we had to actually interrupt a broadcast in order to make this broadcast because we started this week iDeveloper Radio.
Wow.
And I've been broadcasting every podcast that I have produced. Starting with Late Night Coco episode 1 back a few days ago, there are 8.5 days worth of broadcasts to do. In fact, it's more than every broadcast I've done, although I realise this is my 147th podcast. That's an audio podcast. Mm-hmm. That doesn't include videos that we're doing today. Since then, Core Intuition have come on to... what's it called? iDeveloper Radio. That's the thing. And NS Brief have as well. So basically, we're just going to keep adding podcasts. It will just sit and go in a big loop 24 hours a day. You come to this URL or put this URL, but even better, put this URL, open a stream in iTunes, put the URL in, and then it will just appear down in your playlist. And anytime you want a bit of John Fox or a bit of Scotty or a bit of Daniel Jelkett or Manton Reese or Saw Moore in your ears, you can just click on that playlist in iTunes and we will be there. It doesn't matter. Middle of the day, middle of the night, if you're in bed, just lying awake, it's 4 a.m. and you just think, what I need right now is John. What I need right now is John Fox. You can click on there and there it will be.
Yeah, some people might like, you know, crank up Barry White, but if you want to have a child, you need to have us playing on the background while you're working on it.
Oh, Coco Fusion? We put the old episodes of Coco Fusion out there as well, so maybe it's a bit of Danny Gregg you're desperate for. Nah, let's not get ridiculous now. Let's move on.
Okay.
So that's iDeveloper Radio. Up to about 100 listeners. Consecutive listeners on at the same time at one point yesterday, which caused the server to hit an artificial limit that we'd set up in the configuration files and crash.
And you never imagined you'd get that far, did you?
Well, I expected there to be maybe 10 at a time, but we were over 100 at some point. So it's up to, we've cranked the file up to allow for 250. If I have 250 listeners on most of the day, my bandwidth is going to go through the roof and we'll be looking for bandwidth sponsors, but let's just see how it goes. So I've been listening to you for days. I'm quite bored of all this podcast stuff now, you know. It just sits there and pumps away all day, and when I'm walking home, I listen to it. But we've been here this week producing something spectacular, I feel. What have we been doing, John?
We've made a video course called Cappuccino for Coco Developers. So rather comprehensive bit of work, I would say.
So what's Cappuccino for Coco Developers about?
Well, it's saying that if you are an existing Coco developer and you're interested in targeting the web with your application, this is the course that you would want. It assumes that you have familiarity with Xcode and Interface Builder and Foundation and AppKit. But it says if you want to leverage those you know techniques and skills that you have and you want to deploy a serious application to the web, this is the course that will guide you through it. So we start with how do you clone a GitHub which contains the whole source for Cappuccino, how do you build it, how do you get the developer tools, you know, the tool chain up and running in Xcode and this helper application called Xcode Cap. How do you, you know, start to build applications starting from Hello World to much more sophisticated examples. We go over some of the architectural and user experience issues of deploying web app, you know, of developing and deploying web applications. And I feel pretty good about it. It leverages a lot of work that I've done over the last, I don't know, I would say almost a year now in developing these examples, and I push them a little bit forward. And I'm open sourcing a little piece of code that I showed at NS Conference, this thing called MMS Remote Proxy and MMS Remote Proxy Observer, which is a way of dealing with remote representations of objects whose official version lives in a server somewhere. So I don't know. I'm happy. How do you think it turned out?
I think it turned out pretty good, actually. I mean, to be honest, at the start of the week, we weren't quite sure what course we wanted to produce. We knew we had a load of material. Maybe you were more sure than I was, hopefully, because you had the material. But I think actually, what we've produced is actually a reasonably short course, so it's not going to take you forever to watch, but it's long enough and comprehensive enough that as a Cocoa developer, you could spend a morning watching this course, you know, the afternoon going through the examples, and you'd be pretty much up and running with Cappuccino. And maybe if you did the same the next day, watch the course again, yeah, go through the examples again, do that twice, maybe even three times, because to get it stuck, you would be go through. Now, we're getting a number of questions coming through on the chat room, which I realize you haven't got your laptop, John, so you can't see the chat room, so you're going to have to rely on me to tell you. Okay, now Jeppy is online, and he's causing trouble already. He says, you know, when is Cappuccino? When is Cappuccino 1.0 going to be out? Now, we sort of discussed this a little bit in the course, don't we? But, you know, why after, you know, it seems like forever since 280 slides came out, why are we not at 1.0 yet? What's the issue here?
Well, I mean, I can't authoritatively say because I don't make cappuccino, but what they said at CapCon is that they said they were very conservative with their numbering schemes. And so you have to kind of separate into two things. One is it, you know, a sufficiently developed state that you can ship production apps on it? I think the answer for that is absolutely yes. People have been doing it for more than a year now. What they said that they wanted to do before they felt comfortable calling it a 1.0 is to be able to add another round of optimizations to the language. So they're creating something called Objective-J 2.0. They also want to, you know, be confident that the out-of-the-box developer experience of, you know, getting things installed, getting it up and running, having the complete documentation of the classes and whatnot is at a point where they feel this is it. And they haven't quite reached that point yet. So I think the answer of when is it going to come out, I can't say. You know, it could be as soon as a month, could be longer, I don't know.
Now, there was a discussion that went on about this at CapCon. CapCon was the first cappuccino conference that was held in San Francisco in the weekend after WWDC this year that we both went to. Good conference, had a great time. And this question was asked, and it was generally, I think, the team there seemed to be really quite open to, it wasn't criticism, they were prepared to begin to understand that they were, a lot of them were a bunch of just technicians. They're not necessarily product managers or anything else. And, you know, in some ways they're driving for, you know, perfection. I mean, I know that, we were there and they were doing some stuff. And then, Francesco sort of demonstrated Objective J2 and he thought, well, okay, Cappuccino to get to one probably needs Objective J2 in it. And people, yeah, but a number of people said, well, yeah, come on. Look, guys, actually seal it off. Yeah. Put it out, Objective, you know, make that 1.5 or 2 or whatever, because, you know, there's a sense that as the geeks, as the technical geeks, they're never going to be happy with it and therefore it will never reach one. And there was this, and I know since then you've been saying, you know, they've taken a lot of this stuff on board. They're looking at the documentation project. They're looking about how they may do more, you know, bring it to one and do other releases in whatever else and get some, you know, someone to manage it or something. I mean, they haven't got necessarily the money or whatever, do all this stuff yet, but they seemed really open. And it was great because we, I think, almost all of the main contributors to Cappuccino were in the room and all were sort of, you know, giving their direct feedback to those questions. It was really good, wasn't it?
Yeah, it reminds me of what Apple used to do at developer conferences. They stopped doing it, I guess, 2-3 years ago. They used to, you know, invite the various teams you could talk to. There was feedback hours with AppKit team or you know, Cortex team or whatever.
They've not done that since I've been going to WWDC. Yeah. I went in, my first WWDC, I think, was 2008.
Wow. Okay. Well, so yeah. So I guess maybe there's a reason why they stopped doing it, because they didn't want to have to hear the complaints. But they weren't complaints. It was all constructive. And I think the one thing that has happened is people, there was a lot of discussion saying, well, if you go to cappuccino.org right now, you would have the impression that not a whole lot has happened to the framework. And they were like, are you kidding? Have you visited the GitHub page? And there you can see the volume of commits and the number of committers. And I think that really kind of displayed the disconnect they have. I mean, it's as engineers, they would judge the quality of a code base by, you know, the number of submissions and pull requests, et cetera, et cetera. And it's almost like they were from a different world and forgetting about what it is to be the out of the box experience for a developer. And in all reality, that's what's guided this course for me, because I think, well, on the one hand, it was pretty easy for me to figure it out, because A, I was highly motivated, and B, I had the background skills, and C, you know, I've done a bunch of web development before. I've done it, you know, the old-fashioned way, using DOM and CSS, and even the older fashioned way of generating HTML on the server side, you know, dating back a million years. So with that skill set, I never really felt that it's like, you know, completely lost and I would never find my way. But I also would say that I had the advantage of being in San Francisco where all the team was in the beginning and being able to go to you know, weekly, you know, CP coder nights, and I could ask them questions and if I ran into problems, and it was incredibly helpful. Now, absent that, I'm sure I would feel lost if I didn't have access to them or if I didn't have the background that I do have. So my goal in creating the course is to be able to say, look, you know, let's assume this baseline skill set and let's go, you know, let's not assume a whole lot, you know, meaning that, you know, for a lot of people, they may not be, you know, familiar with bootstrapping a development environment from an open source project, you know, and they may not be familiar with they may not even be familiar with how Xcode works under the hood. I mean, you know, how the build process takes place and all the different things that are taking place on your behalf when you say, hey, I want to open up a new project, or hey, I want to compile it. So I really wanted to have this. My hope was that if somebody's out of the box experience of Cappuccino saying, here's how you get the code and here's how you start developing for it, if this course becomes, you know, something even approaching what Hillegass's book or, you know, some of these other, you know, reference books for dating back to Next Step, you know, as a way to get started with it, then I'll be really happy.
Now, I mean, we're getting lots of questions coming through on the chat room, which is great, because I mean, I think this shows a genuine interest. So which one are we going to pick up first? Let's do some of the ones that actually deal with more a little bit about what Cappuccino is before we get into details. Sure. You know, someone here is saying, is Cappuccino a replacement for Ruby and Rails?
No, it's a client-side technology, and we talk about that. So basically, you know, the way the applications are developed, you know, we started with thin clients all the way back in the mainframe days, and we had client server, and then we put everything onto the client, and now we in a way we've come back to a kind of distributed client server architecture where you have, on the one hand, a central server, a web service out there that may store a bunch of data that may be accessed by mobile devices, by desktop applications, and by web applications. And that's a lot of the focus I was giving, saying, you know, if you have a server-side component to you that stores your data and provides services for it, and you want to build a web client for it, Cappuccino is an ideal tool for doing it. And, you know, what Rails does is it's a fantastic tool for building web services, and it's also a great tool for building, you know, template driven, you know, Ajax-y web applications. But in this particular case, when you look at how a desktop app works, you have a model view controller design environment. You store your models in some database of some sort. You have all this great, you know, technology like bindings that we come to know and love in Coco, and you have great tools for building a rich user experience. So you can say that Cappuccino is really focusing on model view controller on in a web application, but the models themselves are representing some data that's stored on a remote server or on a central server. I hope that answers the question.
Yeah, no, that's
not a replacement for it. In fact, one of the examples that we did is we built up a quick little RESTful web service in Rails, but that's all that we were using from Rails. We weren't using any of the HTML page generation because we didn't need to. So in fact, what we did is we take the Cappuccino web application and we symbolically link it to become the public folder of the Rails application. So it will serve out the Cappuccino application, and in turn, the Cappuccino application will make RESTful web service requests to the Rails application. And I think that's a pretty popular architecture.
And I enjoyed that bit of the course as well. Can Cappuccino do mobile web apps?
No, I wouldn't say it would be a good choice for that right now. And part of the reason is because Cappuccino is all about building applications of a similar complexity, you know, to desktop applications. So there's a lot of code for it. If you think all that's in AppKit, for example, that's a lot of code, a lot of functionality. And one of the technologies, well, I think maybe one of the reasons why they're saying, hey, we don't want to call it 1.0 right now, is that there's some further advancements that they can do in stripping, you know, in stripping out code that's never going to be used at all. Because right now the combined AppKit and Foundation frameworks, you know, that baseline for your application is a bit more than can comfortably fit in a mobile device, because mobile devices don't have virtual memory. So, you know, and you're so memory constrained about that, you count every little, you know, kilobyte of data. And that, I think that's the number one reason why it wouldn't be in there.
So, I mean, we've said Cappuccino is for producing sort of a desktop app type experience. But one of the questions we have here is Cappuccino only good for doing a desktop app type experience?
Well, we talk about that in the end. I mean, it depends on what you mean by desktop experience, because one, you could look at it in terms of user experience. It's like, so yes, since they implement, you know, a table view and slider view and you know, sliders and buttons and widgets and all those type of things that you would be used for building desktop applications that look and behave like desktop applications, it's a great choice for that. You know, you get that out of the box for free. So for instance, if you're building an internet application, and that, you know, parenthetically, that was one of the things we learned at Capcom, is the number of internal applications that are being, you know, where Cappuccinos is being used to great effect. So it's excellent for that. But there was a lot of discussion about user experience, saying, well, just because you can make it look and behave like a desktop application, should you really do that? And we address that towards the end of the course. And my answer for that is I definitely agree with some of the discussions, particularly Jorn van Dyk from So Facebook.
Formerly Sofa.
For Sofa, where he was making some presentations, like saying in their own, you know, they had deployed a couple of Cappuccino applications. And what they'd come to realize is that when you're in a browser, you've got a bunch of Chrome, a bunch of control at the edge of, let's call it the canvas where your application is going to run. And you don't want to make it confusing to the user of, you know, where your application begins and ends and where the browser Chrome and the rest of the operating system lives. And so they purposely wanted to tone down the look and feel of the application to make it look less like a desktop application and more kind of like a web experience. But, and this is the important but, is that there are certain things that Cappuccino is really good. It's great and great for direct, you know, manipulation of objects, drag and drop, you know, all those types of things. Working with rich, you know, model objects that are bound to controllers, so that as changes are made, as you modify it, you don't have to write a bunch of, you know, glue code to get, be aware of those changes and ultimately persist them. So I think that we're going to see a new breed of applications that combine the richness of desktop applications, but have a less of an application look and feel to it, if that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense to me, because I've just sat through the course.
Right.
I hope it makes sense to everybody else out there. I mean, we have a question on here from Graham Lee. Does Cappuccino work better with any server software in particular? Do you have to work with it to integrate with your server-side code? Now, I mean, I think, you know, this is where we make quite clear, you know, Cappuccino is a client-side technology. Mm-hmm. It's effectively implemented fully as JavaScript and CSS and images. So there is no, in effect, the Cappuccino side, there is no server-side element at all.
Mm-hmm.
However, when we come to do data, when you choose to do that with Rails, I know some people use Node.js and things to do it. It's that, you know, so I guess the server, the type of server you serve it from, will be more dependent on the sort of technologies you intend to use to do your back end, be that a web service or whatever method you do, as opposed to Cappuccino. Cappuccino actually doesn't care, because it's just text.
Right. That's certainly true. There's a little bit of finesse to that, I can add. Could you add some more color to it? I sound like this is like the Apple financial things. Tim, could you add some color to that? So there are certain things that you can do when you're serving a Cappuccino application that will optimize its, you know, it's how fast the browser can obtain it and how fast it can therefore bootstrap your application. So we talk a little bit about that, about how to do your application compression and you know, the compression of the files that go out, because, you know, even if you've got a couple hundred K of AppKit, ultimately, yes, it is JavaScript, it's text, you can compress it down very, very little. But there are a lot of interesting technologies, things that I've seen in the last year or so for using JavaScript on the server. It's really kind of interesting. Like Node.js is an example. You know, if you look at Google Plus, that's quite interesting. You know, all that technology that was created for Wave, you know, Wave itself as a product failed, but I think a lot of the DNA shows up now in Google Plus for doing this type of real-time updating between applications. And in fact, one of the more interesting things I saw at Capcom was a real-time collaboration for this application called Mockingbird, which is a wireframing application where you could have multiple users opening up, having documents opening and changes made on any one of the user's documents could get propagated to all the other users. And that was all done with Cappuccino on the client side and some really clever JavaScript on the server. So one of the things we talked about in the very beginning is that the folks at 280 North, both as 280 North and some of the collaborators, have worked on a lot of interesting technologies, one of which is called Narwhal and the other is called CommonJS. So CommonJS was kind of a non-browser related JavaScript implementation, which could be running on the server. And Narwhal was a system for building and for updating, JavaScript elements. And actually, 280 slides, if I understand it correctly, their document model is done a lot where they're just literally archiving their client-side objects, not serializing, but archiving them, sending over the wire, and then being kind of stored on the server side as is. So
interesting stuff. Yeah. The rich interactions, Graham Lee's asking again. I know there's some questions, folks, further back up in the chat, and I will come back to. Do the rich interactions like drag and drop, are they only internal to a single Cappuccino app, or could you drag between Cappuccino applications in browser windows?
That's a good question. There is a native drag and drop API that's done by browsers, and that was largely done to be able to facilitate drag and drop from a web application to the host operating system. I would imagine that if you're talking about dragging and dropping between two applications that are served from different hosts, the same origin policy of browsers would prevent that from happening. That makes sense. So, one of the things that is an issue you have to consider when you're doing web applications is the same origin policy, because, essentially what it means is that if you are loading some JavaScript from a web server and it's executing in a browser, when it really is designed to be sandboxed so that the data that goes back to wants to get written back to the server can only be written back to the server that served out the JavaScript in the first place. So which is why you have to, if you have a web service, you have to deploy your Cappuccino application on the same host as where your web service is. So I can't think of anywhere you can drag and drop between two Cappuccino applications unless they were served from the same host and you had some, you were doing it with a complicated, mechanism with frames, iframes.
Cool. Thank you. A very early question we had in the chat room, and I've been sort of waiting to come back to, is, what do you think the main thing we Cocoa devs have to adjust to when working with Cappuccino?
That's a great question. I think the biggest challenge really is the data persistence, because when you're working on the desktop, if somebody says, I want to persist my model objects, the first thing that comes to mind is core data, right? And it's built in. And ultimately what you're doing is you're writing to a local database, a data store. I mean, almost certainly it's going to be SQLite unless you're weird. But in fact, most people really don't even think about that. They just know that core data lets them create an object graph, observe changes to it, and commit those changes to their data store. Well, the data stores is not only it's on the same machines in the same memory space. I mean, you can type a gazillion characters, and if you want, with each character changing as you're typing away in the form, it can observe changes and commit those changes to the database right away, and that's perfectly fine. When you're doing that on the web, and the server that physically has the database where this data is being persisted is thousands of miles and however many network hops away from the browser that's running your application, you don't want to do that. You don't want to save changes with every character. So you have to think a little bit about that in a couple ways. One is that you have to try and limit the number of round trips you're going to do to store your data. So you have to be intelligent about that. And secondly, you have to realize that you're going to be doing all these things asynchronously. So from the time you say, hey, I have this object in memory on my browser, I'm ready to commit the changes, you say save, you have to serialize that object, make the web service request to send it to the server, wait for the server to give you back the response of either yes, that it's succeeded, or the server itself had an error, or there was a network timeout. Those are essentially the three possibilities when you go to do it. And under normal happy circumstances, that happens in milliseconds. Under other difficult circumstances, it may take a number of seconds before you get the response. So as a result, you have to you have to handle that. So, and that's, you know, that's the reason why I created this MMS remote proxy class and this proxy observer, because I face the same problem. And pretty much every cappuccino developer that has data, which they're going to have to store, is going to have it. And that's why I open sourced it. That's probably the biggest thing. If you're a Cocoa developer on the desktop, and I should say further, and you have data that you need to persist. Now, there may be somebody who says, "Hey, I've just got an entertaining game or something like that," and there's very little to persist. Then that may not be a big issue. But if you are doing the types of things that I've done and a lot of developers do, where you have users and you have collections of data of one sort or another, it doesn't matter whether it's design, you know, wireframe designs or curated collections of photos or whatever, you've got a fairly large graph of data that's generated in each session, and you have to serialize that and get it saved and get back. That's where it gets to be a little bit complicated.
I mean, that leads us on nicely to the next question. So how much of my Cocoa code can I just take straight over to Objective-J?
Right. Well, so, you know, there's no magic tool that says, you know, open up an Xcode and press this button, it will port and reconfigure and recompile it for you. That's just not going to happen. The syntax of Objective-J is the same as Objective-C. The APIs that they're implemented are the same. You know, they don't implement every single API that you as a Cocoa developer have. For instance, there's no Quartz composition. And there's no image IO kit or anything like that. But I would say by now, you know, all of Foundation, and I'm going to make a rough guess, I would say of 90 to 95% of AppKit is available for you. So the big language differences between Objective-J and Objective-C are, it's not compiled, so it makes things a little bit simpler because it's garbage collected. You know, there's no retain release, and already that makes your code a lot simpler. Secondly, there's no header files, so which makes, I think, is a huge thing. What I found is that you can adapt it. You know, I think that's probably the best way to describe it. And in fact, one of the things I recommended in my talk is that if you make the decision that you really want to start, you know, taking some of your existing code and your knowledge and bring it to the web, you should pick some, you know, aspect of your application, some core bit of functionality that you say, you know, I have to be able to make this work, otherwise I can't deliver the user experience. And specifically for Memory Miner, it was the view and the controllers for making selection markers on an image and being able to attach data to it and then use it to do pan and zoom. So what I did is I built just a black box, you know, very, very simple test application. And I started copying and pasting the code over kind of method by method. So I basically recreated the class, you know, and then would fill in these methods. And when you copy and paste, then what you end up doing is, because it's not a compiled language, there are no pointers. So if your method signature says it returns NS string asterisk, you would convert that to CP string and omit the asterisk. So if you wanted, you know, you can certainly do some, you know, you could do some search and replace there, to be able to, you know, wherever you have instances of NS, you would convert it to CP. And I suppose that wherever you had, you know, instances of space and asterisk, you could, you know, turn that into no space. And you do things like that. I found that if you did this kind of method by method change, that would go a long way to doing it. But the other thing I would say is that really what Cappuccino gives you is I guess what I would refer to is API muscle memory, meaning that if you say to yourself, how do I do this? And then you say, I'm going to forget about how the browser implements something, but I know how views work. I know how, you know, mouse down works. I know how, you know, draw rect works. Then the answer to how you program something becomes very, very easy. You don't have to think, well, how do I make this thing, you know, when I resize the window, how do I make sure that the view will resize and stay centered in the screen? Well, you ask yourself how you do it in Interface Builder. How would you do it in Cocoa? Well, that's how you do it in Cappuccino. And in fact, one of the things that really does come over quite nicely are your nib files. And that's already a huge time saving, because a lot of the code of an application is archived away in nib files. And the support for working with nib files in Cappuccino is really good. So I hope that answers the question. It said to summarize, there's no magic bullet that will do the conversion for you. But I have definitely taken code that I had running on the desktop, brought it to Cappuccino. I've also done the inverse. I've done things where I say, hey, I implemented undo, for instance, and I hadn't had it in my desktop thing. Well, now I know how to do it, and I can copy and paste some of the code over and do the inverse.
Great. Couple of questions, actually both from the same person in the chat room. Okay, so yeah, this is web applications. So how's the browser compatibility for Cappuccino? You know, what browsers are supported, what aren't supported? And the supplementary question, you know, we might as well deal with them both at the same time is, you know, is a Cappuccino developer, how involved do I have to get in these browser capabilities or differences?
Right. Well, so Cappuccino was made possible and is by the modern web and is targeting it. So when they started working on Cappuccino, you know, we were in the world of Safari. I don't know, I want to say 3 or 4. Chrome hadn't come out. And IE7, I think, had come out. And they wanted to basically say, you know, we'll make it run in you know, IE7 or 8 and, you know, whatever was the current version of Safari. And so, you know, the reality is that if your goal is to make something that will work in IE6, and it has to work in IE6, forget it. You know, forget it in my mind. Don't even try to develop an application. You'll go insane trying. If the majority of your customers are going to be running modern browsers, which to me means, you know, Firefox, I think we're at Firefox 5 now. So, mm-hmm. you know, Firefox 4 and above, or Safari 4 and above, or, you know, Chrome, I don't know which version of Chrome we're at, but basically.
Probably Chrome from the beginning, because right. Chrome's not that old, and it was based on a pretty up-to-date version of WebKit when it was released. So.
Right. So if that's your target and that's acceptable to you, then I haven't really found that much for it. Where I have found issues are, you know, WebKit is really good. I mean, you can make arguments about, you know, if you think that Chrome is a better browser because it has separate processes for each tabs, or you can say, hey, you know, I really like the way the user experience works, or you can also say that the JavaScript engine running in Chrome is slightly faster, may have been slightly faster, maybe it's not a big advantage now, you know. Versus what's in WebKit. But in all reality, WebKit as a rendering engine is pretty amazing. And one of the things that Apple has done is that they've really pushed forward on standards. So for instance, Canvas. Canvas was originally an Apple technology, and it, as far as I remember, it dates from widgets. You know, when widgets came out, they said, we want app developers to make these little fancy little graphical widgets, and we want to be able to let them program in JavaScript and CSS, but there was no way, there was no basically 2D drawing API, so they created Canvas. And now all browsers, even including IE9, implement Canvas, and I think they all do it with hardware acceleration, and that's great. But one of the things I found that Safari in particular has done better than Chrome is they've hardware accelerated CSS transforms. And so what that means, and it's particularly important for me, but what that means in general is that CSS transforms, you know, and transitions are essentially our core animation running in the browser. So Apple has gone ahead and saying, here's the standard we want to do. So if you have a 2D, if you have an object, you can apply this transform to it, and you can also do it over time. You can apply that to any DOM element. That means that any of the stuff that you would imagine manipulating in a core animation-like fashion, you can do in the browser. The performance of it is as absolutely the best in Safari. But even just in the last revision of Chrome, they've now caught up. So if you are target, if you can say, hey, I really want to target WebKit applications, you're going to be very, very happy. Now, Firefox is no particular slouch on this. It's just that it's not quite as good. And for I have particularly high demands, because the type of things I need to be able to do is to take, you know, 2,000 by 2,000 pixel image and to be able to pan and zoom it and do those type of things. Most people don't have to do that. So in reality, the type of animations that you'd want to do, I mean, if you look at the modern web now, if you look at Google, you know, Google Plus, people look at some of the things they do with adding an object to a circle and how it swirls around and how, you know, when you mouse over a stack of photos, it flares out. You know, I've looked at it, and to me, it runs, you know, impeccably in WebKit browsers and work perfectly fine in Firefox. I haven't bothered to look how it looks in IE. I assume it probably they do it what everybody else does, saying, hey, if your browser doesn't have these particular capabilities, don't try to do it. Just leave it static. So it works. It's just not going to be as fancy. So that's a long-winded answer as to you can't completely ignore it. Unless you know that where you're going to be deploying it is, you know, just going to be, you know, a WebKit or Advanced Gecko, meaning Firefox.
I think we're going to have to sort of wrap that up there.
Okay.
That's been, do you know what? I've just sat through a sort of a week of going through this in the course, and I still just find that conversation interesting. So this is good stuff. So we'll get the course out as soon as we can. That's Cappuccino for Cocoa Developers, starring the one and only Mr. John Cockle Fox. And
do I have time to make my public apology?
Yeah, I think actually should. We can't stay much longer because it's Dave's birthday. He's going out for dinner. Okay. He's going out for a big juicy steak, he said this afternoon.
Okay.
I think it's even from that cow he showed you a picture of this morning. That's why he was showing you the picture. Well, that was tea.
I would like to do this. I would like to say for until I came to Tetbury, I always referred to it as East Balkshire. I had no idea what it was like, and I can say to the citizens of Tetbury, including most famous citizen Steve Scott, I apologize for ever having besmirching the reputation of your fine town by referring to it as East Balkshire. And from now on, I'm going to ask you, the listening audience, which city should I now refer to as East Balkshire? Because it can no longer be Tetbury.
I think that's fine. We will let them answer. I do want to finish on one other note, just to say about Jonathan Freeman.
Yes.
In Widget Press, because we've not really, I mean, I know it's a couple of weeks old now, but you've not been around for a couple of weeks because you've been stuffing your face in Italy. The lawsuit got dropped, apparently, although it dropped in a way that allows it to come back if it ever wants to. Mm. But congratulations to Jonathan and Widget Press. Widget Press, Widget Press, Widget Press.
Everybody loves Widget Press.
He's now still got to pay huge legal bills for it. So, I mean, yeah, we're celebrating the fact that he's just spent, a bucket load of money on nothing.
Yeah.
But, well done to that. But it's make about now. On Saturday morning, we are off to
Amsterdam.
Amsterdam. So next week's show will probably be on Monday or Tuesday, coming live from Amsterdam. Now, we will tweet about when it's going to be because it's there. We have no idea what internet connection we'll have. It might just be the pair of us gathered around the microphone on the MacBook or something. But I think it will be just wrong to be in Amsterdam for Amsterdam and not do a live broadcast, maybe from the common workspace or something, or the lunchtime lectures, mm-hmm. or the beach or somewhere. So next week's show won't be on Thursday. It will be from Amsterdam sometime during the week. So watch the Twitter feeds. iDeveloper Radio hopefully will broadcast for the entire eternity from now on. These shows will still go on the RSS feeds. They'll still be in iTunes. But if you just want a bit of random iDeveloper Live or MDN show or Mac Software Business Podcast or Mac Developer Roundtable or Late Night Cocoa or Core Intuition or Cocoa Fusion or NS Brief and maybe one or two others that we're going to get added later on, then just tune in to the URL, which we'll put in the show notes, and it will just be streaming away into your ears all day, unless the iMac that is streaming it has crashed and none of us have noticed, in which case send us an email and we will try and bring it. That's the way the BBC works. They have an iMac broadcasting the BBC, and if someone notices it's crashed, they reboot it and start again. We don't mess around in this country, this is how broadcasting happens.
This is how the King's Speech was propagated.
It was in this way here. So John, I have really, really enjoyed being in the studio with you. It's been nice. We have these lovely microphones in front of us, which are better than the headset I've been wearing. Dave has been in the corner making sure it's all working, so we can assume it's working. Just thank you to everybody in the chat room for some great questions. It's been to I'm sorry, I'm just trying to read something in the chat room here. I think Rolander Post is more famous. Yeah, okay, that's good. John's just taking photos. When you spend a week with John Fox, you realise just how much of a photo and movie addict he is. I'm waffling. So let's just say, John, say goodbye.
Goodbye.
And you lot, until next time, you take care. Yeah.